the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And on the line with me is Seth Cox, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. And as I continue to plug that show, it is a great show, especially this time of year as we're getting ready for the draft. They're going through their prospect, their player rankings and position rankings, and then after the draft, you'll have some immediate, nearly immediate reaction to what happened. You won't get that from this show because we both will be grinding the Cardinals content for 3 days. But this is episode 417. This is number three of our five draft pre-draft shows previewing the draft. We talked about needs and got the first round last week on Tuesday. We started the positions last and we delved into the positions too. We finished the defensive side of the ball last week. Today, episode 417. We are going to focus more on offense. We're going to talk a little bit about kind of the betting odds, the way things are trending in terms of the draft, in terms of betting, which is a fairly good measure of where things will be or tends to be going, because they're basing it on some insider information, some trends, some comments, what's kind of going on social media. And then we're going to talk about three position groups on the offensive side of the ball. We'll talk wide receivers, we'll talk tackles, and then we'll talk interior guys. Let's start with this, Seth. Now, if you want some offensive line content, make sure to listen to Seth. Was it last week or the week before?
Two weeks ago. Yeah, with Sully Football. He does one podcast a year. It's always ours.
It's Seth's show that he does.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's for us, it's always the most enlightening, because as Justin and I always say, it's the most difficult position to understand and to get right consistently. And Sully played in college, so he knows a lot more about the intricacies of it, and then he typically likes to keep his rankings tight and have, you know, maybe 10 guys and then one or two sleepers
there's always two or three guys where he's like, they're probably not going to be that great.
Right. And you know, this year he's got a couple of those. So yeah, like you said, I recommend it. It's always a fun podcast. And like I said, it's always, for us, it's always the most enlightening ones. You know, but you look at it, this is, there's a reason that it's the hardest position outside of quarterback, obviously, to get right consistently. And one is because there's so many offenses now, right? There's just so many different offenses. There are so many offenses that don't ask them to block that much. And what I mean by that is so many
offensive linemen head into the NFL never having played in a three-point stance.
Right. I mean, the Cardinals, their first draft pick was Steve Keim. That was Jonathan Cooper, right?
He had never done it.
And you know, he got in and started working out, and they told him to get in a three-point stance, and he was like, I've never done it. And they were kind of like, what happened? And, like, you know, that's not on the coaches. I mean, that's one of the funny things that people always say, you know, it's the coaches got to coach people up. Man, I'm telling you guys now.
NFL coaches are not, they don't normally have to coach stance.
Yeah, three, yeah, but not just that. I mean, we talk about it all the time. One of the big things and one of the biggest mysteries now or misconceptions now is that you know, kids get coached up, and the reality is with the limited off season that they're allowed to do and the limited physical work they're allowed to do, especially physical work, offensive line play goes down so quickly because they're not allowed to hit, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so one of the things, and it was, you know, and we always go back to DJ Humphreys, you know, and he, say what you want about BA, say what you want about that situation, but DJ Humphreys took that next step when he got with, and I believe it was LaCharles Bentley, correct?
Yes.
And started
the
O-line
performance
out.
And that particular, that's where offensive linemen improve.
Yeah, and we saw it with Josh Jones this year. I think I who was Jones with? Was he with LaCharles as well?
I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, and so that's the biggest thing. So one of the things Sully talked about a lot was like, you know, a guy we'll discuss, Paris Johnson. You know, he's got to clean up things with his hands. Can coaching do that in the NFL? Yeah, if that's the only thing you have to clean up, right? Like if everything else is good and you got to clean up hand placement, that's really easy. But like we joked about, but we're serious, like working out of a three-point stance, you know, working on power schemes instead of zone schemes, things like that. Like if they've never done it, you have to be able to work on it. And the coaches just, quite frankly, unfortunately, don't have the time. So that's one of the things now. And so, you know, that's why offensive line play is so difficult, and why we always, you know, we always lean on somebody that's been there, done that, and worked with people that do it. And so, I mean, there's a reason a guy like Duke Manyweather straight up just doesn't work for an NFL team and does his own thing, because he makes a lot more money doing that.
Absolutely. Let's start on the show tonight, recording on a Tuesday night, where there's an interesting phenomenon that has occurred in terms of the sports betting world. And one of the ways you can kind of gauge where things are trending in terms of the NFL draft, especially near the top, is the betting odds and the betting lines. And there's a significant change in the fact that, well, one, like you go to DraftKings, there are no odds for the number three pick right now. They're like, no, that's off the board. There's too much
unknown.
Uncertainty. There's too much unknown with the number three pick. But here's the thing. We've been going this entire offseason with the understanding and the assumption that quarterbacks were going to go 1-2. That once the Carolina Panthers traded up to number one, they would take either Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud, and then the Houston Texans picking second would take the other one of the two that did not get selected. That's pretty much the assumption we're going under. That has changed now, and I'm sure a lot of this is the misinformation campaigns that come with the NFL draft, because teams never want you to know exactly who they're taking. And so it's like, well, we might not take a quarterback, but the betting odds are now as this. The betting favorite, the one with the shortest odds, is Will Anderson, not a quarterback, the Alabama pass rusher, plus 150. And I'll say this, what's even crazier about this, crazier than Will Anderson having the shortest odds, the next shortest odds is Will Levis and not C.J. Stroud. Now, C.J. Stroud is barely behind, so it goes plus 150, Will Anderson, plus 250, Will Levis, Kentucky quarterback, and then Tyree Wilson, the other pass rusher at the top of the draft from Texas Tech, plus 250, and then it's plus 275 with C.J. Stroud, Ohio State quarterback. That's bonkers to me. I'll just be honest. That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
No, and, you know, it'll be interesting. It's one of the things that you and I have discussed a long time ago when D'Amico Ryans got hired. I talked to somebody that works with San Francisco, and they told me, you know, that he was kind of pushing to go, that he wouldn't mind getting like a Jimmy Garoppolo and giving himself a year and taking Will Anderson. But that never came to fruition, right? So you're just kind of,
right.
And so you just assumed, like you said, that when you're picking there, that you're going to take a quarterback, but there's this odd idea that they don't like anybody but Bryce Young.
That
and so if that's the case, this is a twofold thing. First off, that Lovie Smith win was much more of FU than we expected, right? Like,
yes,
if he was the only quarterback that they like in this draft. And then two, when it was that time, how were you not making that move up if you're Houston?
Right.
It's not so much that, you know, Will Anderson's not great. It's that how can you,
like, when you're a team that does not have a quarterback and you're starting over with a new coach, that's the priority. You get yourself a quarterback, and they didn't get one in the veteran route. So
there's an interesting theory out there that I've talked to some people about, and this theory is that this is all a ploy, and that they're the team trying to trade up with Arizona.
Who's that?
And the Texans. And that they're going to pick 2 and 3.
Oh.
And
the
theory is that they are saying, we're not going to take a quarterback. You know, we're not going to do it. So what we're going to do is we're going to take Will Anderson and then, but there's a small belief or somebody that I've talked to's theory is that they are going to take Will Anderson at 2 and then have a deal in place with the Cardinals to move up to 3 to make sure that they get their guy. And, you know, the Cardinals then would end up with 12 and next year's first round pick. And, you know, I don't remember all the picks that the Texans have, if I'm being completely honest, but, you know, something of that nature. And that's one of the things that could end up happening from all of this, is that Houston's going to play the game. And so maybe the Cardinals end up with 12 and 33 this year. And then, you know, next year's first and whatnot. And so if that were to happen, it would make sense. Like, if they play that game and they do that, but if they are just like, nope, we're taking Will Anderson. And if Will Levis or Anthony Richardson don't fall to us at 12, or CJ Stroud, now that he's allegedly falling, like you were pointing out, we'll just take, you know, we'll just run it back with Davis Mills. And we know that.
Well,
that's probably going to mean a 3 or 4 win season, but that's okay, because we've got.
Then you can get Caleb Williams next year.
Yeah, and so but it's such a risky thing, because
totally.
What happens if you win, five games?
Yeah,
and so now you're
5 games. You're at 10.
Yeah, now you're picking 7 to 10. And I know they still have the Browns picks coming, right? But all of a sudden you're like really hoping that whoever has the first pick, which, by the way, doesn't it seem like the Rams are really gunning for at this point?
the Rams are wow.
And so, like, yeah, like, it's crazy to think that this team would just be like, no, because, I mean, yes, they'll have 2 first next year. I just double checked. I wanted to make sure they have their first and Cleveland's first. But you have to assume Cleveland's going to be a playoff team.
Yeah, they're going to be in the mix for sure.
And so, I don't know. I mean,
there's one other factor with this, is that the reason why we're talking about is that Bryce Young is now not just the betting creator, but by far the odds-on favorite to be number one overall to the Panthers. As he is at -1400, that's basically a bet you don't make, because you have to lay down $14 for every one you're going to win. And in terms of implied odds, that's a 93% likelihood that he's going to be drafted first overall. And so it comes down to that. CJ Stroud is next at plus 700, even though it didn't feel like for a little bit that Stroud was might have been the favorite, but that's kind of changed. Right now, Bryce Young, driver's seat, going to be drafted number one. We'll be doing our mock draft next week. If this is the trend, we're both picking Bryce Young number one, because that's where all the evidence is going to. But
yeah, I mean, that's where it's at. It's kind of interesting because you have Bryce Young. I mean, I'm on FanDuel, and their odds are minus 1500. Holy I'm not God. Sure what DraftKings were, but you know, for those that aren't, you know, versed in betting, that literally means you have to bet $1,500 to win $100. Like, so it's a sucker bet until you get like hard confirmation. And then once you get hard confirmation, guess what happens?
It comes off the board.
Yeah. They just come off. It just comes off the board. So you either have to commit now and bet it, or you just like, it's one of those things I wouldn't even touch. Like, I'd be like, no, I'm not interested. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like I said, from a team building standpoint, it doesn't make sense, because here's what I also think. I think Houston is going to be good enough where they're probably not going to be picking top three next year. Even without drafting quarterback, because that's how much I respect D'Amico Ryans. That's the whole thing. You gotta kind of be careful if you are the Texans, that you don't put yourself in a position where you end up hurting yourself. And I know the flip side to that is, you know, look at the New York Jets, right, with Zach Wilson, and they're kind of mirror images of each other. You have Zach Wilson, that was the number two pick. They had the 14th pick and then the 34th pick in the draft. That's virtually what Houston has, right? I mean, they have 2, 12, and 33. So, I mean, we're talking like almost exactly the same. And they took Zach Wilson, Elijah Vera Tucker, and Elijah Moore. So an offensive lineman, a wide receiver, and Zach Wilson. Wilson's a bust. Vera Tucker's really good, but he's coming off an injury, and they've traded Elijah Moore to the Cleveland Browns, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It's not a sure thing, but my point is, Robert Saleh is a good enough coach that they picked, you know, second his, you know, when he was hired, and they won four games. So now they were picking fourth, and that makes it, again, now you don't control anything.
Yeah. Now, I will say this a little bit different. CJ Stroud is a much different prospect than Zach Wilson was.
Especially, right. Exactly.
Especially considering that season. I'm going to go back to Zach Wilson. Now, I am not I don't watch BYU football like BYU fans do, but I do have a lot of family and friends who are ginormous BYU football fans. They weren't sold on Zach Wilson entering that season. Zach Wilson was not the firm number one starter, and it was that weird COVID year where they went and they had to scramble their schedule being an independent team. And then he put up to the special year. He played. Oh my gosh, he played great. But
yeah, he played phenomenal. But again, it was an odd year, and it was a 1 year thing. Something you and I talk about all the time with these guys. You know, you have always be wary of 1 year guys. That it's not an automatic no, right? But it is. It is something that you look at and you go, why not more consistent, right? Like, why not a couple of years or that? So,
and then that throw at his pro day or the combine.
Right, where people just kind of freaked out. And you're like, yeah.
CJ Stroud's different. Like, he was at the comp. Like, he is, like, his passing ability. Like, you can question some of the things of his ability. And we'll talk quarterbacks in our show later in the week, but we won't really talk about these quarterbacks. But CJ Stroud, as a passer, oh my gosh. The questions you have of him is how does he respond off schedule when it's not perfectly on schedule, when it's not the first read, this, that, can he still, but the arm talent is there, the pinpoint accuracy is there. Like, I don't know why you would, unless you just literally don't like the quarterbacks. I just have a hard time believing, and I know Ian Rappaport said this, I think it was on the Pat McAfee show. He's as dialed in as there is anyone in the NFL. And he says, he doesn't have information one way or the other. He says, I just can't see them not take a quarterback there.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where we all are, right?
But the thing is that things change. I think that if the Texans take Will Anderson number two, it does two things to the Cardinals, because it makes the Cardinals much more desperate to trade the pick, because I don't think they I don't think there is anyone in the draft that they love at number three, other than maybe Anderson, and they reluctantly would draft him at number three.
Yeah.
And two, if only one quarterback's come off the board, then you have to figure that there will be some desperate teams. So it'll be an interesting thing in terms of supply and demand. You will have a Cardinals team that really, really, really wants to trade out, but you should probably be able to find a team that really, really, really wants to trade up. That's the thing that doesn't make any sense.
Right, but it does seem like you have a couple. It still really does seem like that the Raiders and the Titans want to come up and get their guy. Now, the question becomes, and something you've written about a couple times, the question becomes, is 11 too far back? Well, we're going to talk about some prospects that will probably be available at 11 tonight, and that should help you guys feel more confident if that's what they end up doing, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. So you can trade back, but if you, assuming you'd get a first, assuming you get that first from Tennessee for next year, ooh, they're going to be bad this year probably. That could be a very, very, very attractive pick right now. That said, I don't believe it. I don't think that would be our first chaos pick of the draft when we get to draft night. And there is always one or two, some chaos picks that happen early on, or chaos moves. And then there'll always be a couple like, wait, who, why? Usually New England does that, but
yeah. And I think, we are going to see that. But it's going to be interesting because this is one of the few times that there's not really a consensus on anything outside of potentially, like you said, Bryce Young and Will Anderson at this point.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk and love. Let's move on and actually continue with our positional previews. First up, the wide receiver position. That way we can close with the offensive line. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We want to talk about, we're finally talking about the offensive side of the ball. So if you want to hear our defensive position previews for the draft, you need to go back to episodes 415 and 416. Tuesday's show last week, we talked specifically about the pass rushers and the edge defenders and the interior defensive linemen. We wrapped up defense last week on Thursday talking about linebackers, cornerbacks, and safeties, a position you don't really want to have to draft, and it's a really bad time for Buda Baker to request a trade, but that's another time. So we are now on the offensive side of the ball. Any other year we feel like wide receiver is kind of a priority. We don't feel like it's a priority, but some of the guys that they're meeting with seem to suggest that that's definitely a position on their radar. So the reason why we're picking offensive line and receiver is because we believe that those will be sort of a focus, perhaps early in the draft, especially the offensive line. And when we come back later this week, we will talk about running back, tight end, and quarterback, not early, but guys later in the draft. So let's talk wide receiver. The guys may be in play with the Cardinals drafting if they, we'll assume with the trade back, who are kind of the top guys and who are guys to know later on in the draft for whatever trades or not. Who's the best receiver in the draft? I know some people have said, like, it's gone kind of all over the place. I know at one time, Quentin Johnston, TCU, was kind of the favorite. You've got Jordan Addison with his year that he had at Pitt and then for USC last year. But isn't it Jackson Smith Njigba? Is he the consensus number one right now?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's also the betting favorite at minus 250 to be the first wide receiver off the board. I think he goes in that 11 range that we were talking about. So, you know, you look at it, you've got him, you know, anywhere in that 11 to 16 range where he could make sense. And I think he'd be the first receiver off the board. You know, he's a really intriguing prospect because his testing numbers came out. He tested really, really well as a slot guy. He's one of the quickest wide receivers in the history of, you know, of the NFL draft in terms of three cone and short shuttle. Like, it's just, it's elite. And then he ran a sub 4.5 40 at his pro day at, you know, six under, just a hair under 6'1" and 200 pounds. You know, it's hard for people to see it, but he's got a lot of similarities to like a Julian Edelman coming at, you know, who was a really good wide receiver for a long time, obviously for the New England Patriots. You know, and so it'll just depend on exactly what you're looking for. We talked about him last night. He's our wide receiver one, both of our wide receiver ones. He's, you know, he's a really nice fit anywhere. And the question becomes, can he be a guy that wins outside consistently? This was supposed to be the year at Ohio State when he was supposed to do it, right? But unfortunately, the knee injury kind of cost him that. And that's just unfortunate that, you know, we didn't get to see him have that opportunity this year. That being said, you know, he's, you know what you have from the slot. He was a fifth or a nearly 1600 yard receiver out of the slot last year with two other first round picks, you know, flanking him. So he's a dynamic player, a really great receiver. And I mean, again, you might not be talking about a guy that ends up being like a lockdown wide receiver one, but I don't think you're talking about a guy that's going to have any problems getting 8, 9, you know, 1,000 yards every season.
How many first round receivers do you think there will be this year?
That is such a, like a, the question of the day right now.
The other guys that you've got, Johnson out of TCU, the Cardinals have met with him. So I think there is some real good interest in him should he fall to the second round. Good length,
right, and
good after, yeah, good great speed.
So Justin and I were talking about this last night, and like, he's a more athletic guy, so I don't want this, but he's also, and he is physical, but like, if he's gonna like make it in the NFL and be a guy that has a lot of success, he's gonna have to be more like Anquan Boldin, right? Like, so he's a little more athletic from a testing standpoint, but not like overly. You know, I think he ran in the like a 4.5 something.
I think it was 4.46 is what he
did. They test him that high? I thought it was a 4 something, but you could be right, or 4.5 something. But yeah, I mean, he has great length, you know, 81 inch wingspan, 33, almost 34 inch arms, explosive vertical and broad
4.49.
Okay, Yeah, so he's right there. But, like, he doesn't, you know, he's not a guy that consistently plays like that. I've seen some people be like, oh, he can be like DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, you know how we are about comps. Like, that's just such a high-end comp. And DeAndre was such a technician as a route runner.
And has his hands. Holy cow, those hands.
Right, and that's, I mean, and Quentin Johnson doesn't have bad hands.
No, but he doesn't have, like, what DeAndre's, like, 10 and an eighth? Is that what
Yeah, exactly. Like, he doesn't have vice grips, you know. He's got normal sized hands. So he's a guy, but here's the thing. He gives them, like, if you think about, and again, all these, like, comps come up, like, really high, so I don't want anybody to think that, but, like, he would give them kind of the A.J. Brown of their offense, right? You know, looking like
it's a really nice complimentary. He's the body type that they need at receiver, especially for trading DeAndre, because when you've got skinny, mini, tiny Marquise Brown, and you've got teeny, tiny, stocky Rondell Moore,
and you've got lean, thin Greg Dortch as well. And
that's
so
true.
Those are, you know, you need something different. So Johnson offers you that. That's why. You know, somebody mentioned today, and I never try to jump into these anymore because it's just, you know, everybody's got their opinion and things like that. But somebody said today, like, and the next guy that's kind of on everybody's list, Jordan Addison, right? And I'm like, and I didn't respond to it. I just kind of
he's really good. Is he fit in Arizona?
can you have four really lean receivers? That's how I feel about Zay Flowers too, right? So Addison, you know, he's our wide receiver too. He was both of our wide receiver too. It just came out that way. We don't do like a combined ranking, but, and if he tested better, he probably would have been wide receiver one, because I mean, his junior season was otherworldly.
Yes,
or I guess sophomore season when he won the Biletnikoff
with Kenny Pickett as a rookie.
Yeah,
throwing him the ball.
Right. And so, but you've got a guy that's real, real, real thin. I mean, just super lean.
You liked him kind of like a Devontae Smith, where you don't doubt his ability to produce in the NFL, but you wonder about his durability. And in terms of, since we look at the Cardinals, is he a good fit with who they have? Talent aside, do you want another guy built like that, only not fast?
Right. No. And that's what I would say. No, I just don't think you can. I mean, you look at the Eagles, they had Quez Watkins and then obviously Devontae Smith. And they were like, we got to get.
So they get A.J. Brown and then it's a party.
Right.
Or is Daniel Jeremiah. And now they're cooking with gas.
Right. And so, you know, even a guy like Zay Flowers, who I love as a prospect, think he's fantastic, you know, and he tested out extremely well. You know, at his size, and a guy that can be a souped up, you know, outside guy, again, 5'10", 180. Like, he's just, you need, or did he even come in at 180? I think he was in the 170s.
Zay?
Yeah.
It was 182 at the combine.
Okay, he was, okay. Yeah, that.
But that's probably really more like 175.
Right, and he's sub 5'10". Like, so.
Yeah.
You know. And so, like, and one of his
short,
like, physical
arms. Oh, wow, short arms, 29
yeah.
and a quarter.
One of his, yeah, and that's what I was going to say, one of his physical comps is Greg Dortch, right? So,
and had anyone heard of Greg Dortch before?
Right, and so you just, you know, it's just one of those things. Again, fantastic player. I just don't think you can see the Cardinals draft him. So we know that the Cardinals have visited with three wide receivers. One at the combine, Jonathan Mingo, I think we should at least mention. Mingo is another big-bodied Ole Miss receiver, right? You know, so Monty with those big-body Ole Miss boys, right? They like him. So Mingo comes in. I just want to make sure, because I want to use his combine stats so we're not differing.
He's 6'1", almost
basically
6'2",
220 pounds though.
4'4",
but he ran a 4.4, and his jumps were fantastic. I mean, just absolutely fantastic. above average arm length, and again, DeAndre Hopkins like hands at 10 3/8, like massive hands. Yeah, and so you look at him, you got a guy that, you know, a name I've thrown out a couple of times, with like Cedric Tillman, who's a guy that we've seen, but a guy that he could be like is like a Mohamed Sanu. He's actually much faster. Much faster is a strong statement, but Sanu is a 4.67 guy. You know, Mingo's a 4.46 guy. So I mean, 0.2 seconds a lot. I mean, you know, so he's a guy that I really, really like. But the question, he got mocked, I think, by Peter Schrager, right, in the first round.
Oh wow.
So is he a guy that you would be like happy with taking at 34? I don't know.
We feel like if someone like Johnston is available, but we all sort of feel collectively as Cardinals fans that round two is probably, so it depends on who. So if you get like Will Anderson or Tyree Wilson, then you've got to look at cornerbacks, offensive, defensive linemen in round two at 34. That's kind of the or. And if you go cornerback, then you're looking at maybe edge, offensive line, defensive line. That's kind of, I think, collectively we all feel that for number 34 should be. But if a guy like Johnston is available that you feel like is a someone who's fallen farther than they should have, then you'd be okay with that, right?
Right. And then another guy, the last guy they met with privately, so they met with Quentin Johnston and Jonathan Mingo, the last wide receiver they met with, is a different type of guy, and that's Charlie Jones out of Purdue, who's another small guy, 5'11", yeah, 175. Interestingly, didn't play a ton of slot snaps, even though he's built like it. So it'll be interesting to see, like, where he fits in, because again, you've got, it feels like, a plethora of those guys, and we're talking, this is a guy that you're talking about like day three, probably round five ish.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're talking about him as a, like a high end guy by any means whatsoever, but they have met with him privately. So, I'd have to, let me double check. I don't know what he offers as a, if he offers anything as like a punt returner. And I know people would laugh at that and be like, why would they? But I mean, think about how much energy and effort they've put into the special teams this year, right?
Right.
And he has done a lot of punt returning at Iowa and at Purdue. Okay. So punts and kicks. Okay. So
that would make sense then.
Yeah, maybe that's like a late day three type of guy they're looking at, is like, hey, this is, you know, what we need in order to, you know, at pick like 180, where you're, you know, filling out rosters and things like that. Cause outside of that, again, I just don't know why you would go that route. I'm not saying he's bad by any means. I like him as a prospect, but I don't know why you would get a redundant player. Right.
Right. There are later in the draft, I know that there's some really intriguing players, but in the round three range, there's some really physical, there's some guys that physically are impressive, but let's think about round three. Who are some guys that, as I've run my mock draft simulations, these are just using the PFF stuff, the names that keep coming up right around there, Nathaniel Dell out of Houston is a name that is frequently available and near the top of the big board at that point. So there's Nathaniel Dell is also, who is it? Mims. Is he, I haven't seen him available. I think he usually goes earlier, like mid to late second round. Parker Washington out of Penn State is a guy that shows up on there, but who are some legitimate good selections in round three? In terms of where they have 66 and 96, where the Cardinals pick.
Yeah, it just depends on, you know, what your thoughts are of Mingo. First off, you know, he'd be a guy that you didn't mention, but is really intriguing at 96 to me is Trey Palmer, because again, we're talking about a different size guy.
And wow, the speed, 4.33.
Yeah. Yeah. Like elite speed. And he's 6'1", 190. So he's already a bigger guy. And then, like you said, elite speed, kind of, I don't remember if you remember the name, but Lee Evans out of Wisconsin, went to Buffalo, had a really nice career with them. Type of player. I mean, yeah, he might be a one trick pony, but yeah, good luck.
That's a good trick. If you can use that trick at elite level, this, especially when you're looking late day two, that's not a bad selection.
Yeah, another guy I really, really like in that area is A.T. Perry out of Wake Forest. Again, another really big guy. You know, think of
6'3.5",
198,
4.47.
Yeah, really good and a good explosive broad jump, you know, and you don't have to worry, you know, his vertical was fine at 35, you know, it's slightly below average, but when you're 6'4 already with good arm length, you don't have to worry about
yes, and the arms, like you look at the wingspan, he's almost 82 inches, so like yeah, 6'10".
He reminds me of a guy last year that I really liked, George Pickens, you know. That
yes.
If you could get him on, you know, at that 80, what is it? It's at like the 96 range, that would be ideal. You know, he's another one, but you mentioned Tank Dell. I love Tank Dell or Nathaniel Dell, but he makes the guys we talked about earlier look big. He's legitimately sub 5'9". He's 5'8", 3'8".
165. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I mean, he's fast, but he's 4.49. He's not, it's not like he's like John Brown was, or JJ Nelson,
like Greg Dortch. Cause Greg Dortch is not a burner. He's quick, but he's not a burner.
Right. And so that's the thing is, like, when you drafted John Brown, he was a 4.3 guy. When you drafted JJ Nelson, he was a 4.28 guy.
And he was in the fifth round. So,
right. So like that outlier status of Dell is just interesting. You know, Jaden Reed's a guy that's gotten a little bit of love lately. He's a guy that was a huge production guy at Michigan State. I think he's in 2021. I don't remember what year of college that was for him, but he had a great season, and then they as a whole struggled, you know. So, but another 5'10", 190 guy.
He had 1,026 yards in 2021, 10 touchdowns, averaged 17.4 yards per reception.
Yeah, and he's a really good player, and I think he'd be an interesting fit, you know, but he wouldn't be ideal, I think, for them. And then the other guy that is usually around there when you run those mocks and is Rashee Rice.
Yes.
The kid out of SMU. And he's another one, a little under 6'1", 204 pounds. He's a 4.51 guy, but explosive jumps, 41 inch vertical, 128 inch broad. He gives you a little bit something different. Obviously super high end of what he's become, but he's got some similar athletic comps to like a Brandon Ayuk. Obviously that would be way ideal, but you know, you look at it, a guy like Nate Burleson, who had a really long and productive career right out of that played with Seattle. I think he was with the Lions as well. And then with the Vikings early in his career, and he was drafted in the third round. So kind of that range, he had one 1,000 yard season, multiple, you know, 800 yard seasons, good player, solid number three receiver. I think that's something you could look at with like a Rashee Rice. Parker Washington is an interesting,
another tiny guy.
Yeah.
But he's a stockier, but another little guy.
Yeah, he's built like a running back.
Yes.
It's really weird. And so I don't know. Like, he's close. I mean, obviously not athletically, but he's closer to like Rondell Moore, right? At 5'9", 204. So you're talking about a really, you know, thickly built guy. I think he's going to go on day three, personally. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him go, you know, in the fifth round. He never took that jump that everybody was kind of expecting him to take. So it'll be interesting to see what the NFL thinks of him because, you know, undersized. And then I mentioned Cedric Tillman, you know, a guy right in that third round range, 6'3", 215, massive, massive year as last year. And then, you know, didn't perform early on and then got hurt. I believe he tore his ACL, but I could be wrong about that. But, you know, you look at it. Last season, he had 1,081 yards and 12 touchdowns. This year, just 37 catches for 417 yards and 3 touchdowns. He's a big dude. So he gives you, you know, that bigger body outside X receiver that they, like you said, they just lack right now. You know, his, like, highest end comp would be like a Josh Gordon, you know, when he behaved and was able to play type thing.
When he wasn't addicted.
Yeah, and so you look at that, you know, and again, 6'3", 213, he ran a 4.54. He had a 37-inch vert and 128-inch broad, so he's a good athlete, good big hands, long arms. Like, he just gives you a little something different than what you've seen or what you have on the roster right now. And again, in that 96 range, it would, you know, it would be something, like you said, that could make sense for them, especially as they, if they have moved on from DeAndre Hopkins at that time.
Guys on day three, here are a few names that one, either I watched play because of stuff, or two, some of the physical traits are super, super intriguing. Probably late day three, BYU's Puka Nacua. He didn't test. Where is he, BYU? So he's got a little bit more. He's got 6'1", 201. He didn't test at the combine, but and he did deal with a little bit of nagging injuries his last year there at BYU. But if you liked Tyler Algier as a running back coming out, the two different positions, it's the same type of mentality, but from the receiver position. He was their most important offensive player. I think he's a little intriguing guy late in the draft for the type of mentality plays. Physically, though, now you're going to have to remind me because I can't remember. I was listening to your guys' show way back when you're doing physical comps. I don't remember which show it was because it was driving all night and had your show on. And the kid out of West Virginia, Bryce Ford Wheaton, 6'3", 438. Is he the guy that can't catch the ball?
Yes.
Okay. You see the comp, you see the traits, you're like 6'3", 438 speed. He's 6'3", 6'9", 3 cone, explosive jumps. He doesn't catch the ball, apparently. Does he have a serious case? Does he have bad drops? Is that what it is?
Yeah, and he's just a guy that's very, you know, you mentioned it. Again, one trick, and it's an elite trick, but if you can't finish the trick, then it's not really, you know, worth it at that point. He's a guy that he's intriguing. Like you said, on day three, that's where you take a flyer on a guy like that.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I wouldn't have a problem if he were drafted in the fifth or sixth round. Absolutely.
Right. Exactly. You take him at 168 and you're like, hey, we'll see what happens. If it doesn't work out, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, it's one of those guys when you see guys like that, right? Like Ford Wheaton, he's been at West Virginia all 5 years or 4 years, sorry, 4 years. And he's put up basically the same numbers every year.
Had like 700 receiving yards last year. Is that what it was?
Yeah. 675, only averaged just a hair under 11 yards per reception. And you're like, bro, you are
so fast.
Like 220 with a 4.38 40, but like you said, like those agility drills, you're like, you're really athletic. Like, why are you not able to do anything?
Is it a case where offensively that they used him the Cardinals used Rondale Moore? Were they?
Yeah, it is, unfortunately. And so, like, one of his high-end comps, and I don't know if you remember this knucklehead, but was like Martavis Bryant.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And the one game was that. Ugh. The Steelers game against the Cardinals, and they had no business of losing.
Right. And and you look at Martavis Bryant's numbers, you know, his rookie season, he had 549 yards receiving and averaged over 21 yards per catch. Year two, he had 765 yards receiving, dropped that down to 15. And then, you know, then trouble started and he was suspended his third season and came back and never really regained his form. You know, so you look at it, a guy like him, if he obviously stays on the straight and narrow, could he be a guy, you know, that works out? And he went, I mean, his was different, obviously, but he went in the fourth round. So again, if you can get a Ford Wheaton in the fifth round, he's really intriguing.
Yeah.
Another guy that is a little different than anything they have. And I think if I remember right, he dealt with a lot of injuries, in his career. And so it's just been a case of like, what do you get with him? Like, is he a guy that can stay healthy? I want to double check though. I could be wrong about the injuries, but he, the kid out of Virginia, Dontavian Wicks. I gotta look.
6'1", 206, 4.62 on the 40.
He didn't run a great 40, but he was injured this year. That's what I thought. And I think he was injured his sophomore year too. But to last year, 57 catches, but he had over 1,200 yards receiving and 9 touchdowns, which is, you know, I know, and Justin and I make fun of the ACC all the time because it's kind of like the Pac-12, right? It's just not great. But you look at what he did last year, you know, in a loss to North Carolina, who had a good season last year, or 2 years ago, sorry, 2 years ago, 7 catches for 183 yards. You know, Wake Forest, 8 for 114. You know, against Brigham Young in that season, and, you know, he had 4 for 125. And then against Pitt, he went for 10 for 144. And I think Pitt won the ACC that year. He's an intriguing guy. If the medicals check out, that you can look at like 180, 213, you know, again, a different style of wide receiver than what you have on the roster right now. And they can offer you a little bit, you know, different stuff, which is, you know, all the time what you're looking for. A name that I'm sure is going to get brought up, and I just want to, I had it and now I can't find it. There's Andre.
I was going to bring him up. So Isaivis, the kid out of Princeton, he hasn't played much football.
No. And he was at the Senior Bowl and really kind of underwhelmed. And so,
but athletically, his physical traits are rare. 6'3", 200, 40 in the 4.3s. Was it 4.43 or is it?
4.43, 39 inches.
And then a 6.71 three cone. So the physical traits are off the charts. Even if he hasn't played a lot. And I know, what is in Jim Nagy? He was pounding the table about him on Twitter at one point. Because of his leg. If you look at it this way, there's still more improvement and development that should be coming from him. But at minimum, with those physical traits, if he's got the right mentality, he should be a stud special teams player.
Right. And that's what it you know, you look at it as a guy that you take, you know, at that 213 range, right? Because he does have elite physical traits, and you take a chance on him. Can he become a return man? Can he become an elite gunner, right? Like, those, all those things matter. And so if you get that out of him, and then at all he becomes anything as a wide receiver, it's just a cherry on top. But you look at him, you have to wonder, you know, even in the Ivy League, he only averaged, you know, under 17 yards a catch last year, where he had only 700 yards, and then or 2 years ago, and then last year under 15 yards a catch, and he had 924 receiving yards. So it's kind of like Bryce Ford Wheaton, any of these guys, when you're like, hey, if you're that big and that athletic, like, and especially when you're at Princeton, you're like, why aren't you doing a little more, right? And that's always what the question is. So it'll be interesting to see, because there's a lot of intrigue in that 96 and on range, where there's a lot of guys that you can talk me into. Quentin Johnson's the only guy I would take at 34. He's my wide receiver 3 in the draft. Like I said, I think you can get him in a mold and usage wise similar to like an AJ Brown or Anquan Boldin, but you got to get that physicality up a little bit. But he has the size and speed and aggressiveness to do that. He's just got to bring it more often.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, with our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to the offensive line and talk tackles specifically, although this will get a little hairy. We're coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, with our Cardinals talk on the web. The tackle group is a little bit difficult because there's a few you're not exactly sure if they're going to be tackles or going to be guards. On Touchdown Wire's site for Touchdown Wire, is part of the USA Today and Full Wire, Doug Farrar, when he's doing his rankings, he only included on his top players at each position, he only included 5 tackles. And that's because there's so much that you don't know. So you've got guys like Broderick Jones. Is he going to play tackle? Is he going to play guard? He's got the athleticism. But let's talk more about the tackles that we know are going to be tackles. And the Cardinals, depending on what they do with that first pick, if they trade out, a tackle is really in play. And in round one, especially if they trade back and they're around the late single digits, even as far back as number 11, aren't there about 3 or 4, maybe even 5 tackles, probably 3 maybe, that are legitimate possibilities? Say they go back as far as number 11. There's legitimately 3 tackle possibilities that would make sense, right?
Yeah, and this is you know, if you listen to it, there's a couple guys, you know, it just depends on what you want. But the pure tackles, you look at it, Paris Johnson Jr., you know, I brought him up a little bit earlier just as a point of reference, but he's one of the cleanest, kind of most athletic prospects to come out in a while. You know, like Sully said, his biggest thing is he's got to get better and stronger with his punch. It's one of those things that we talk about, you know, in that Ohio State spread offense where they're getting rid of the ball so quick, he doesn't have to get his hands on guys consistently to win in pass pro. And so, like, when he gets to the NFL, he's going to have to be able to do that more consistently. But that's something that, you know, any O-line coach worth his salt, because he does so much other stuff well.
And if I recall from the show, every report about Johnson as a ball player, he's a hard worker who would get that.
Yeah, he's like that in spades, and he's a guy that has played a lot of snaps. He's only played one full year at left tackle. He had a really good season. He played at right guard. So he's a guy that can, you know, that you can move. You know, you're going to try him at
so
tackle.
It's a little, you probably think of a tackle, but if you need him in a pinch, like Josh Jones a couple years ago, where you move him in right guard and you feel much better than, because Josh Jones wasn't even a 4-year starter at left tackle at Houston, which made it really hard. Like, it was a big adjustment for him when he moved inside.
Yeah, and you look at it, you know, he has some athletic comps that are really good, similar to a guy like a DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who I've talked about before. You know, DeBrickashaw was, I think he was like the, I want to say a top 10 pick, you know, but one of the things about him was he just was great. Yeah, he was the fourth overall pick. I thought so. But he was just like consistent for a decade. He made three Pro Bowls, but like he never an All-Pro, but he literally started 160 games in 10 seasons. He started every game. Like the,
yeah. 10 seasons of just being on in the starting lineup.
Right. And so when you look at it, you just, you never had to worry about him, right? Like you never had to worry about him being out there. And I don't think that can be understated how important that is. You know, everybody's like, if you're not Trent Williams, you're not a good offensive tackle. It's like, no, no, that's not the case because there's only one Trent Williams, right? So if you get a guy that's as good as DeBrickashaw, you run to the podium, you take it, and you're excited.
Look at Kelvin Beachum and the career he's had.
Right. And another comp I've seen come up, and this would be super high end if he was able to flip sides and play right tackle at a high level, is Ryan Ramczyk, who's been phenomenal for the Saints for 5 seasons, you know, out of Wisconsin. I'd have to go back and look if Ramczyk played left tackle in college. I would imagine he did, though. But, you know, again, similar physical build and comps, you know, 6'6", 315, long arms, 13 1/8 inch arms, and really, really solid athleticism with 110-inch broad jump. So a really nice guy at the top.
He played left tackle at Wisconsin.
Okay, so yeah, and so that's why I'm saying the comparison makes sense to me. You know, you mentioned it, number two, and a guy that Sully loves, but is a little more projection, and that's Broderick Jones, right? You know, a guy that only has one season as the full-time starter at left tackle. He played about half the snaps last year. He is a straight up like bully. Like this dude is, he's big. He's a freak athlete. These are the type of guys you bet on, right?
Right. Well, he's got length with the arms. Yeah. He's 6'5". He's got the size. They talk about DJ Humphries and what he's turned into. DJ Humphries was extremely young. He had a plan. So he was basically age 20 when he came out of college into the NFL draft. And the main thing about him was this. Can he keep the weight on? Can he play at 300 pounds? Can he move at 300 pounds? And it took him a while to be able to show that because he played really lean. He was super lean in Florida. Brother Jones already 311.
Right. And a high-end comp for him is a guy like Jack Conklin, who's been, you know, again, another guy that moved to right tackle. But these guys are elite athletes.
Yes.
And I think Conklin was even an All-Pro one season, but he's been two-time All-Pro, excuse me.
But he's been fantastic. I've heard where is guard. I've heard him talked about as maybe being a better guard, but doesn't he have all the length traits that you'd like at tackle?
Yeah, I would think there's no – I mean, he can play guard, but I think he's going to get every opportunity to –
Well, the athleticism, that he's got a 9-foot broad, 30-inch vert, 4.97, 40, and that's at 311 pounds.
Right. He moves so well. And then, like you mentioned, like great size and length. And so, you know, if you have to kick him inside, he actually comps out to like a Billy Turner, who's had a really nice career in the NFL. The Cardinals tried to sign him, a couple of years ago, right?
Mm-hmm, when he was.
And so these are really high end, you know, comps that worked out really well. But he, you don't want to say can't miss, because obviously any of these guys can miss, but like they just come from blue blood programs.
Right. With Georgia, like, you like pretty much everybody that comes off these Georgia teams the last couple of years, right? The athletes that they have are insane. Yeah, I wouldn't feel bad about, so at three, heck, would it be a bad pick at three if they can't trade out?
No, not at all. I mean, if Will Anderson's not there, I don't think either of those guys are bad picks because, again, you're talking about potential right tackle for the next decade. And you look at what made the Titans successful while Monty was there, and it was having Taylor Lewan and Jack Conklin, right?
Correct.
Like, having those guys as bookends, it made it easier to put not lesser players, but invest less in the middle. And then the final guy, if they traded back into that 11, 11 range, is Darnell Wright. And we've talked about him a little bit.
And all he does is just block the crap out of everybody.
Everybody, was it, including...
Every single that's the thing. Playing at Tennessee in the SEC, the greatest pass rushers that were coming out this year, guess what? He stonewalled them all.
He did. And it wasn't even, and you, this sounds like an overstatement, but like, it didn't even seem like it was hard. Like, he's just, and he's one of the elite guys in the sense that he's spent, he had, 550 snaps in 2020 at right tackle. Then he had over 900 snaps last year at left tackle. And then he was back on the right side with 900 snaps this year. Like, so he is elite at, as a tackle. He can play at either side. You draft him at 11 if you trade back, and you don't worry about, you don't worry about right tackle for a long time. I mentioned it before. His like, obviously highest in athletic comp is like with Jason Peters, because there's just not very many men that are 6'5 and 330 pounds that move like they do. Like, it doesn't happen.
Yeah. again, 82 inch wingspan, the arms 33 3/4, 501 40, 29 inch vert, 9'6" broad. Now, this is a man who's 6'5, 330 pounds. I'm 5'11, 225. I can't do any of those.
Right. It's just, I mean, he's just such a freak of nature. And like I said, again, this is like a super high end, low end comp, but like, that's how much I like him. And you're talking about a guy like Roger Saffold, right? That's just been in the NFL for 12 years as a starter. So again, like, you get those guys and you're like, if he's just Roger Saffold and makes a couple Pro Bowls and it starts, 17 games a season for a decade, that's fine. But maybe you strike, catch lightning in a bottle, and he ends up being one of these, unique generational talents at the position. And he has that high-end ability because he is just such a unique guy.
The next group of guys after that, there's three basically elite tackles, and then the rest are riskier, like DeJuan Jones, Ohio State, Anton Harrison out of Oklahoma. Next two that are kind of in that range?
Yeah, and it's interesting because the one guy that Soli's completely out on is Harrison.
Oh, okay.
He talked about he's not physical enough. And, that's, again, one of those things that we've talked about or a couple times and brought up a couple times. It's just, these guys in these spread offenses, they don't have to be as physical as they once were. Harrison, I'm not as low on him, but, again, I'm always kind of acquiesced to Soli in these instances. And
I know he also really liked Tyler Steen, although that was more you could hedge and he can play guard. He believes, right, he feels that he can play guard really well if he doesn't work out a tackle.
Right. And so, I mean, we can look at who the Cardinals have met with, which is, you mentioned Anton Harrison. They've met with him privately. Jalen Duncan, who's another intriguing guy out of Maryland, who at 34 would be an intriguing type of guy. Ironically, you know, one of his comps is DJ Humphries, right? So, you know, a guy that has only played left tackle. He played a little bit of right tackle last year, but like 50 snaps, that's it. But, you know, a good size prospect, a guy that checks a lot of boxes as starter over his career. So, you know, he would be an intriguing guy. You know, they've met with Paris Johnson. They met with Broderick Jones. They met with Darnell Wright. So those are, you know, the high end guys. And then, like you said, you go to that next level of guys. So they met with, Brayden Daniels, who's a swing guy. Where do they list? They list him as a tackle, don't they?
Where do you go to school?
The Utah. I don't know where. I gotta check.
No, he said they have him listed at guard.
Okay, they do. Okay, then the next guy would be they've met with one of Sully's favorite guys. They probably a late, like that 96th pick.
Saldivari, right?
Yeah, Nick Saldivari out of Old Dominion. They met with him virtually.
They think he can play literally any position on the line.
Right, and so he's a guy that has a lot of people excited. So if you were able to get him at 96, you know, that would be really good. 6'6", 320. Arm length is intriguing, only at 33 1/4, so he's like slightly over the threshold to be a tackle, but like just barely. 40 was fine at 5'2", but he had really, really good jumps. And above average short shuttle. So, you know, a guy, again, that is just really intriguing on where does he fit, and a nasty guy coming out of Old Dominion, where he played up and really impressed with his showing, you know, at the offseason workouts, which is where those things come in handy, right? Is you want to see those guys that are a little undersized, or not undersized, sorry, a little known, come out and play really well. And he, Saldivari, was one of them. They've met with Anthony Bradford out of LSU. These guys are all listed differently depending on what site you're looking at.
The Combine had him listed at guard.
Okay, so let's leave him with the guards. Where do you have... is it M Manning? IIM Manning?
Where'd he go?
I gotta check out if I'm spelling that right. These guys, I can't find anything. But yeah, they met with him out of Hawaii as well.
He must be a
guard as well then.
From Hawaii, you said?
Yeah, I don't see him listed as the tackles. I'm going through the guards now.
Was he not a combine invite?
He must not have been, no.
No, he's not listed in the combine.
Interesting, because they met with him. They had a workout with him. So interesting. So, yeah, so those are the guys. And then, you know, like you said, the rest are guards. You know, a couple intriguing guys that they didn't meet with, Blake Freeland was literally one of the most athletic offensive tackle prospects.
Almost 6'8", 302 with a 4.98, with a 4.98, 40, 7.46, 3 cone, 10 foot broad. What the heck? Now,
he might need to slim down and go play power forward in the NBA. Cause
the question is this, was that, I don't know what he played at BYU. What weight he played at, because the 302, that was probably a forced 302, I would imagine.
Yeah, and he played right tackle in 2020 and then was the left tackle in 21 and 22 and highly thought of, man, but like, you know, I don't know, did they starve this poor kid on his mission for like 2 years? Like, what happened to him? Like, how are you 6'8 and 300 pounds, man? Like, just eat something. But yeah, he's a really intriguing guy because you just don't see guys that big move that way. The only one I can really remember is Colton Miller, and he came in at 309, and he's ended up being a nice player for the Raiders.
Yeah, and with, he just went surprisingly high when he went 10th overall, I think. And yeah. that rookie year was ugly.
It was ugly. Yeah, and so, you know, you just don't see guys that big and that light. That's the biggest thing. I mean, it's tough to find any kind of comps. That's why I said, like, Colton Miller is really the only one. You know, Connor McDermott, I think he was drafted a couple years ago and didn't work out. I'm double-checking my notes here. And so that's kind of the – still in the league, so let's see if he's playing. He started 6 games last year. So, I mean, but he went in the 6th round. You know, that's what I'm saying. Just 6'8 and sub 320 is just, it's just not a number you see a lot. And that's the thing is you might see 6'7, but usually they're like 315. And I just don't, I mean, he's intriguing because he's just such a freak athlete. Like, well, legitimately, you just don't see guys that are that big move that
way.
We
only mention him by name, DeJuan Jones, but he's a giant. 6'8", 374, got athleticism.
He's the opposite end of Freeland. Like, he...
374, and he runs a 5.35. But, like you guys mentioned it on your show, and we've seen it before, guys that large... Like, we wondered about Mekhi Becton. I loved Mekhi Becton coming out of college. He can't stay healthy. It's hard to stay healthy at that size.
It is. And, you know, you look back, you've got a guy like Mike Williams, and he was drafted super, super early in, like, 2002, I want to say. Yeah, he was drafted 4th overall out of Texas. You remember? Because he was right after right after Leonard Davis. Remember? Because Leonard Davis was that size.
Giant.
And then he was drafted in the first round. And then Mike Williams came out the year after him. Could you imagine back then that you had Leonard Davis, Mike Williams, and then Ricky Williams running behind them? Like, it's crazy. But yeah, like DeJuan Jones, and that's the thing is, like, Leonard was just such a freak athlete, you know, for that size. It's hard to find guys that move that way, right? Like, you just don't see guys that move that way. And like you said, I mean, their numbers were similar, Leonard and DeJuan Jones, but he's obviously not Leonard Davis, right? he was not that much of an athlete. And so it'll be interesting, but really, really good pass protector because of those long arms. And he did a nice job. He does a nice job in zone runs, you know, where he's able to get to his spot and not have to worry about, you know, necessarily reaching guys in a power scheme. So that'll be what's interesting is, you know, is he a guy that can do that? You know, it's just, you just don't see guys this size. And so you're taking a gamble on traits and hoping that he's one of the few guys that's able to sustain some health in that way. Because humans aren't supposed to be this big. I mean,
no, they're not.
6'8", 375 is just such, like, it's really absurd. If anything, it's just absurd. But that being said, I would love to watch him block for Kyler Murray, because just for the hilarity of the huddles.
I imagine the celebration after a touchdown of Murray scoring a touchdown, and then Jones lifts him up.
Yeah, it would be fantastic.
Oh, geez. All right, coming up next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best Kirk Cardinals talk on the web. We'll wrap things up talking about the interior on the offensive line, center and guards. That's coming up next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best Kirk Cardinals talk on the web. Let's start with the centers because it feels there's just fewer of them that are worth talking about, right? We feel like that center's got it has to be a position of focus, either early enough with a guy that you can throw into the starting lineup first year, or someone you can maybe project even a little more than like Lasita Smith last year, playing center moving forward, where you then can go out and sign like Ben Jones. Like there's a couple of vets out there that we know, we feel like the Cardinals are just waiting. John Michael Schmitz is pretty much consensus number one in terms of centers, could go in the first round. Do you think he'll probably go in the first round or will be a high second rounder?
I think he'll be a high second rounder, but you know, you can never tell because of the way everybody's kind of fallen in love with him. The first mention I've seen of it was the New York Giants taking him at like 25 or something like that. And you're like,
really? I've seen him to the Seahawks at 20.
Yeah. And so you look at those, you know, those names and you're just like, I hope he gets out of the first round. I mean, that's the big thing, right? If he gets out of the first round and at 34, I think it's a slam dunk.
Like, right. though he apparently is not the Cardinals' favorite, right? From what we like, Tony Pauline is, he does a lot of good stuff for the draft, but he also hears a lot of things, and a lot of the things he hears are what people want him to hear to then say to other people.
Right.
And he heard outright that the Cardinals will draft Luke Whipler. I mean, you can't really guarantee that.
Right. And you look at it, and like one of the things with like Whipler is that he's probably available at 66. So it was probably more like, you know, if he's available or if the Cardinals haven't taken a guy before that, they're going to take Luke Whipler at 66.
And it'll be interesting to see if he is in fact a guy they really like, if they are aggressive after last year.
Right.
They knew what they were doing when they traded the first round pick for Hollywood, but the Ravens ended up taking the player the Cardinals would have drafted with that draft pick, with that selection being Tyler Linderbaum, center. But then the Cardinals,
he was just really good. That's all.
and we figured this out. We heard this. No one will tell. No one will say absolutely that this is what happened. But you can even watch on Flight Plan, and there were two guys that they loved in the second round. One was Trey McBride, who they ended up drafting, and the other was Nebraska center Cam Jurgens. The Eagles got him. And won't even play him. They have Jason Kelce. They re-signed him. But
yeah, just trade him to the Cardinals for 96 at this point.
That'd be fantastic. But I wonder if they're going to make sure that they get – so maybe draft him a little bit. I've done a couple of mock drafts where it worked out where in the second round I traded back twice. I wanted to get Luke Whipler. I'm thinking if I want to run this scenario. The Cardinals want to get Luke Whipler but don't necessarily want to wait till 66. And so I think I got a second-round pick from a trade back in the first round, and then I traded back from that pick twice. And
yeah, that's something you could definitely see. Whipler's, you know, high-end comp is a guy like David Andrews, who, I mean... Right.
He played all those years for the Patriots.
Right. He's never going to be like an all-pro or in the Pro Bowl or anything.
But he's
like that.
Good enough to be Tom Brady's center.
Right. But yeah, exactly. He was Tom Brady's center for 8 years. Yeah. Like,
I got this question for you. When it comes to Whipler, do you have him higher than Joe Tippmann out of Wisconsin? Apparently, all the centers in the Big Ten are good. Is that what?
Yeah, and I mean, that makes sense. I mean, they're guys that have to do a lot in terms of run blocking as well. So they offer a little bit more in that.
Is Tippmann too big for the Cardinals?
I was going to say that. I know John Michael Schmitz is
6'3", 301, but yeah, Whipler's 6'3", 303. The Cardinals, yeah. I will say this, they changed their center profile. Before, they were going undersized. Mason Cole, the kid out of Georgia, can't remember his name now. I don't
Lamont
know.
Lamont Gaillard, yeah.
Yeah, Lamont Gaillard. But then when they got Rodney Hudson, suddenly they like, oh, we want a bigger guy. And so they went and got Hudson, and then Max Garcia, the backup, who is built kind of the same way. I wonder what the profile is. I guess if you're going with Monty Austin for it, if you kind of think David Andrews, so you're going with long but not too thick. I mean, 303 is right there, but maybe not 6'6", 313.
No, yeah, I think Tippmann is a little too tall for the position for the Cardinals. I like Whipler and John Michael Schmitz better, but Tippmann's a really nice athlete. He's got really short arms for being that height, though. So I think he's a center only in that case. He's kind of like Ethan Pochick was coming out, which isn't a bad thing, right? Like, Pochick's been a good center and played a little guard in the NFL. I think his height allows him to play guard. I always worry about guys that have sub 33 inch arms but are like 6'6", because now all of a sudden it's a lot longer reach, right?
Got a question, because I've run across him before. I don't know anything about him. Penn State's Juice Scruggs. How what is he as a prospect?
Scruggs is a guy that when you look at it, and I just want to make sure I have my numbers right in terms of his size.
6'2", 301, 33 inch and a quarter arms.
Yeah, so he was a guy that was really similar to Hronis Grassu coming out. And I think Grassu's still in the league. I don't know if he's playing. He hasn't been able to stay healthy. That was kind of his thing, even going back to Oregon. But like, from a size profile, obviously he's, you know, a little similar to that. Scruggs is a guy that he's played a little bit of different positions. He played left guard in 2020. He played four snaps at center, and then he played some right guard. Then he played mostly right guard last year, but did have 239 snaps at center, and then was just a center this year. It's really interesting because he 6'3", 301, he's not ideal size. He's a little undersized, but he has longer arms at 33 and a quarter, right? He has huge hands, and then he's really strong, and he had a really good vertical. His broad was average and his three cone was average, which is fine for centers. You know, it's not as important. But his short shuttle was bad, which is what's concerning to me, because I'm not sure he's a guy that fits like a gap scheme as well, where you would think he'd be able to move laterally a little better as a center needing to play more in zone, especially if he's needing to get, you know, to backers on the second level quickly. It's interesting that he did not test well in that way, because when you look at him, he does play with a little more pop and explosiveness. It's always a little bit of a concern when they don't test that well, because there are some, you know, numbers, and above a 4.8 is always tough for a smaller guy. Like, if he was like 330, you'd be like, oh, it's no issue. But like at barely 301, but here's the thing, is he's a guy you can probably get at 96, right? Yeah. Like he's a guy that would be able to probably be available at 96. And so, you know, if you want to take that chance, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like I said, you're talking about a guy that you know, probably is similar to like a in size. Again, I you know, I'm not ever projecting anybody to have injuries like Grasso did, but in that size to Hieronymus Grasso, and so where does that fit in? You know, and then another guy we talked about that doesn't get as much love as everybody else, but you know, he's had a really solid, I mean, he started a ton in the SEC, and that's Ricky Stromberg. It's really interesting because he's, you know, 6'3", 306, good arm length. He didn't do the shuttle, but he did do the vertical and broad and was like really, really explosive.
32 you know, and a half and 9'3".
Yeah, for an offensive lineman, those are 89th and 93rd percentile. So it's just like...
Still better than me.
Yeah, right, exactly. And he profiles similar to like a Nick Hardwick, who I think played for a long time for the Chargers. Yeah, the Chargers. I did guess right. That was not bad. You know, and again, just played a long time for the Chargers, you know, snapping to I think he even snapped to Breeze first and then to Phillip Rivers. But if not, it was, yeah, he was with Breeze and then to Phillip Rivers. So, I mean, that's a long time ago, but like, you know, the profile's there. But going back to it, I mean, I think if John Michael Schmitz is at 34, I'd take him.
Yeah, makes sense.
I wouldn't even like think twice about it. I'd take him. And I think you have your center for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years, you know, making sure you re-sign him. But and, you know, he profiles similar to like John Sullivan, who I think just played forever. The Minnesota Vikings. He was their center forever. And then I think, yeah, and then he was with the Rams at the end and had like a really good career and then retired on them abruptly. And they were like, what are we going to do now? So, you know, again, a guy that obviously can't project a 10-year career, but if you get a guy that can play for 10 years in the NFL, like, whew, that's a good pick. But yeah, I mean, Whipler, John Michael Schmitz, you know, Schmitz in round two, Whipler, if you feel confident you can get him at 66 in round three, and then Ricky Stromberg at 96, or even 105. I think all three of those guys could offer, you know, day one starting potential for the Cardinals.
Any guys that project that could project as a future center? I know there's the thought that from tackle, Saldivari could be a center moving forward.
Saldivari, and then the other guy is the big boy, Steve Avila. I've seen some people.
He played center. He played center a year, so that's not much. Yeah. That's not even much of a projection because he did it for a year. But it just turns out that he was even better as a guard,
right? And so, you know, Avila is going to be the interesting one. You know, he had 371 snaps as a center, and then played over 100 snaps at right tackle in 2020. And then last year, like you said, about 685. So he had over 1,000 snaps in his career at center, and then over 1,000 snaps this year at left guard. So, I mean, this is a guy that in either sense is just kind of a badass.
I know Skoronski's kind of the number one across the board kind of guard. He played tackle in college, obviously, because he was a great lineman. And when you play at Northwestern and you're a great lineman, you're going to play left tackle. But I think Avila might be my favorite guard in this group. Maybe it's because I remember when Will Hernandez was coming out, how much we both loved him.
Yeah, and they do have a lot of similarities. Another guy he projects and profiles similarly to is like John Feliciano, who's been a really nice player in the NFL, you know, drafted in the fourth round, so a little further back. But, I mean, he's started for the Bills and now is the starting center for the New York Giants. So like, again, another guy that's had a really good career. Big guys like that are, you know, it's just, again, tough to find guys that size. And so, you know, he's got a similar profile to Will Hernandez, as you mentioned. Another guy that had a really dominant 4-year stretch, but again, guys that are 330 plus pounds that are sub 6'4", you just always worry about them, I guess is the best way to put it. Deuce Latui, you know, he's got similar profile to that. But do you remember a guy that played for the Steelers, Chris Kimowatu?
Yes.
Like I said, for 4 years, he was a dominant left guard, and then injuries and just not being able to do it anymore. Those are the guys that, you know, he profiles like, and it's not ironic or lost on me at all that most of these guys from a size profile that fit with Avila, all were drafted in the early 2000s, you know, because that's when that was in vogue, and these guys were coming out at 330, 340, you know, and getting drafted and then having really solid careers but short lived. So I think it's a little different now. I think these guys are able to take care of their bodies a little better, because they are, you know, even though they are so big, and they're able to be successful for longer because of that. But, you know, that's the one I would say like negative on him for Avila, just because, again, you just don't see guys that are sub 6'4", but over 330 pounds. But you look at it, he moves well, good jumps, really, you know, average three cone, which is fine. Average three cone and short shuttle, which is fine for a guy that's, again, in his 330s.
But more importantly, he doesn't go past those benchmarks.
No, he doesn't fall short of them, which is, like you said, the big thing for those guys. You know, when you look at them, it's interesting to see the guys that they brought in. We mentioned a couple of them, so we'll run through them again, though. Offensive guard. So we said Sal Devery, he's a big dude, right? And then start back at the top, Anthony Bradford, played at LSU, right? And he's another just kind of mammoth guy. So I wonder if that's, I mean, obviously we haven't seen it yet, so we don't know, but 6'4 and 330. And
they also, they talked to McClendon Curtis, 6'5, almost 6'6, 324.
Right. And so I wonder if it's a conscious effort. Do you think that's an Austin Fort Sears thing?
That must be. It must be.
Yeah. Cause I mean, these guys, I mean, it's just, they're just massive. I mean, that there's no other way to put it. Like, and so, you know, a lot of the physical profiles are similar. Bradford profile similar to like Aaron Banks coming out a couple of years ago out of Notre Dame. I don't know if you remember him.
Yeah.
And he went in
San Fran.
Yeah, and he went in the second round. But again, Bradford's just a massive, massive man. Huge bench number at the combine, but it was his vertical and broad that were like, oh, this guy can. He's athletic. I mean, 77th percentile for his vertical, 76th percentile for his broad. 50 percentile for both of his three cone and 20 yard short shuttle. So you're like, oh, okay, he can move well enough. He gets around, you know, but again, a power guy. So I'm interested to see if that's where they're leaning for those guys, because again, you know, you mentioned it, the only kind of smaller guy they brought in was Braden Daniels. And he is much smaller than all these gentlemen we have been discussing, because I think Daniels is sub 290.
He's 294 at the combine.
Yeah, so I mean, just a completely different guy. So I don't know, man. I don't know where they're going with it, but it's a lot. You know, that's two. I mean, we're talking 40 pounds difference.
Yeah,
there. You know, and the top guy, the top kind of guard. Pure guard prospect, if you're not looking at Skoronski, is Osiris Torrance. he's a dainty fellow, right? At he came in at 6'5 and 330 at the combine. He's just, again, these guys are just massive. And Torrence is a right guard only, it looks like. I mean, he's played mostly right guard. But the question is, you know, how athletic is he? Because, like, he is real close on those numbers that we look at,
yeah,
in terms
seven,
of
7'9". No,
yeah,
like,
that's like
4.81 on the shuttle.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, because he's so big, like a 4.81, you're like, okay, I'll let that pass. But like, it's just, but his. And but he did have an 8.5 broad jump, which shows a little explosiveness. But it's just, you know, again, you're just these guys, these size, man, it's just crazy how big they're getting all of a sudden again. Because we've, you know, the trend had been the like 6'4", 315 pound guards that could move. And now all of a sudden you're getting these mass movers again. Because, I mean, you look at it, like even a guy, on day two or three in like NC State's Chandler Zavala, right? He came in at 6'5", 325. So like your top like pure guard prospects are Osiris Torrence at 6'5", 330, Steve Avila at 6'4.5" or 6'3.5" and 330, and then Chandler Zavala at 6'5" and 325. Like, you're just, and then the Cardinals are bringing in guys that fit that same profile that are like day three guys. And like you mentioned, in Saldivari, in McClendon Curtis and Anthony Bradford, like it's just, it's interesting because we don't know yet where they're going. It's going to be interesting to see where they go because we don't know yet. Yeah. Right. Like, we just have no idea.
And we'll know more in a couple of weeks. In fact, a little more than a week. With that, we will end this edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast, best of our Cardinals talk on the web. It was a long one, supersized edition. We had a lot to talk about. We'll be back recording Thursday night. We will talk about the uniforms that are going to be revealed just before we record, and then we will wrap up our positional previews. We'll talk about the running backs. We'll talk about the tight ends. We'll talk about quarterbacks, if there's any interest at any of them, later on. So that'll be coming up next week. We will do our first round mock draft and then the draft, and we will record again the following week to review the draft. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise of Sea Red podcast. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.